KISS 101.9 CITR. Oh, you're sitting in the beautiful city of Vancouver. Oh, you're listening to Shameless 101.9 CITR. You're listening to Shameless Vancouver.
They keep spilling from my hands on the paper. I'm in Virginia, 3 a.m. and I can't fall asleep. Just a little bit of faith is what I want. It's what I need in my institution.
Working class heroes out of Hamilton, Ontario. They are the Arkells, and that was Whistleblower here on Shameless on 101.9 FM CITR in Vancouver. You know, I'm not really a big follower of the Junos anymore, the whole Bieber, Drake, Nickelback thing. Really not my scene, but I'm very glad to see the Arkells get recognized with the win for Group of the Year. Probably the only word that really matters, isn't it? No, of course, it's not true at all. They put on a great show, you know, they're great guys to interview, and Michigan Left is a great album. You should definitely pick it up. Now, for tonight's show, we will continue our look at Fan Expo of Vancouver. It's going to be a great convention for comics, movies, TVs. It's going down Saturday and Sunday, the 21st and 22nd of April, right here in Vancouver. Been far too long for a classic convention to hit our city limits. And I will be in conversation with two people who will be at that very convention, both from the esteemed TV programs, The Electric Playground and Reviews on the Run on City TV and the G4 Network. They are Sean Haddon and Victor Lucas. Part one of the Victor Lucas interview you can still catch podcasted at CITR.ca, of course, under Shameless. That is coming up, though, after a couple tracks. This first one is from CITR's, and it goes out to CITR's own Cursorific, who is performing at the Rickshaw Theatre downtown tonight. He always has the nicest, far too nice things to say about my show, but, you know, maybe his is better. Parts Unknown, Mondays at 1. Here's Cursorific from Bible Belts with For Real.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Flaming Angels Boutique, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, The Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl, and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
Despite the fact that 8 in 10 Canadians are against warrantless and costly online spying, the government remains stubborn, set to cement this scheme into law. With their huge PR budget, they've unleashed a reckless and irresponsible campaign that suggests warrantless collection of our private data is on par with a phone book. We can't let them trick Canadians. Go to www.openmedia.ca now to find out what you can do to get involved and stop this smoke and mirrors campaign the government has started.
those classy dudes in M83 with their latest Steve McQueen, an ode to a classic actor of such great films as Bullet. Just check it out if you ever get the chance. M83 will also be in town at the Vogue Theater on Friday, April 27th. It's a sold-out show, but hey, you've always got to have hope. We are back here with Victor Lucas of Greedy Productions, also the Electric Playground and Reviews on the Run TV programs. Now, around this time last year, I had a chat with your Toronto correspondent, Sean Hatton, and he said he had his start with Greedy Productions when he went to an interview that you had with him, and then you gave him an impromptu audition.
Yeah.
Is this a usual method that you do to scout talent?
I look for people that, and no offense to actors or people that want to be hosts, but those aren't the people that are right for our show. You know, we don't use teleprompters. And we don't have people that are thinking of this as a step in their career, you know? So I look at people, especially now, especially with the technology that's so off the shelf, readily available, and so inexpensive for people to be able to go and create their own stuff and have a distribution system in place for nothing. I look at people that can already create. And if they can already create and they can already invest themselves into this type of material, that's going to fascinate me more. And people ask me all the time how they can get a job with us or how they can end up reviewing on the show or whatever. And if they don't have a link to show me on YouTube or their own website or their own blog or whatever to show me that they have the skills and the tenacity and their own desire to be in this space already, I don't have the time of day for them. Because, frankly, I didn't have any of that opportunity out there. There was no industry like this when I started. You know, there was nothing like this. There were magazines, and the web was brand new, you know? And there was like 5 or 6 magazines that were successful, and maybe 3 other websites besides Electric Playground in 1995. And nothing on TV that was anywhere remotely close to what we were putting out there. And I don't mean to sound this to be boastful. I'm just saying that now there are thousands of video-based websites that cover games and thousands of ways to interpret these, you know, how you go about doing this. Maybe millions. I don't know. There's tons of websites. There's tons of vehicles and ways to get yourself out there. And there are phones that have cameras better than the cameras that I started making Electric Playground with. And people have these things in their pockets, and they have, you know, inexpensive broadband, you know, internet connections, and they have good computers at home. And if they knock on my door or send me a tweet and pass me a resume and say they want a job here, and they don't use any of the stuff that's available to them to kind of show the world who they are and what they can do, I'm not interested at all. And Sean Hatton and Marissa Roberto and Raju Mudar and Steve Tilley and Scott Jones and Ben Silverman and Jose Sanchez, I've known since we've been doing this from very, very early days. So I saw the cool guy that he was, the crazy guy that he was, and we kind of, you know, worked him into our family right from his earliest days. But Miri, I found her because she was blogging and posting her own videos and showing her intelligence and showing her ability to communicate about media. All of these people have been brought into the team based on their passion and skill and ability to self-generate stuff and interest in this, like honest interest in this stuff, in this subject matter. So we don't audition people and send this up to agents and say, okay, we're looking for this type of person. No, we want this person, you know? And generally, I'm finding that stuff myself. I'm always looking, I follow a lot of people. I follow 1,000 people on Twitter, and I scan a ton of stuff. I read a lot of stuff. I look at a lot of stuff. I'm always curious to see what other people are working on and building and talking about and the way their approaches. And I've also met a ton of people over the years, too, right, that I'd meet at events and things like that. That's how I knew Ben and Steve and Scott. So I really try to isolate people that are honest, can handle themselves in front of the camera, have a confidence, have a sense of humor, and are self-generating, you know, that don't need to be prodded into developing or handed a script and say that, or here are your questions for today. And I watch a lot of TV that looks like it's made that way, and it's punishing, and I think people see right through that kind of stuff.
So briefly on Fan Expo, you get bombarded a lot at conventions, not Fan Expo, but E3 or wherever you tend to go.
I wouldn't say bombarded. I think...
in a good way.
In Toronto, at Fan Expo Toronto, we have a lot of viewers for our shows that have been watching for a while, and it was... I've been going for about 3 or 4 years, and it's awesome. I mean, there is no other word for it. It's really nice to hear that people watch our stuff and they like what we do, and people would stop me as I walk through the halls for sure, and if I'm shopping for an action figure or a comic, which I love, and I love to do that at conventions. And Toronto was super busy for that, and it was really humbling and gratifying to have people line up to meet you and ask for your autograph and stuff like that. None of this stuff that you ever dream is ever going to happen. You know, when you think of, I'm just going to review video games on TV, you don't think, well, someday people are going to actually give a crap and ask me for an autograph. You don't think about that, and it happens, and it's really weird. But we've never had anything like this in Vancouver, and I'll tell you that we do get spotted on the street because we shoot reviews on the run everywhere, and people do yell, I like the show, man, you guys are good, or, you know, whatever. And that's awesome, but people generally kind of leave us alone in Vancouver, and I think that's part of the fun of it too, right? Like and the ease of being able to produce it the way that we do, the easy way that we can get into these conversations. I think it'd be a little bit weird if we took the camera and the mics out and wanted to shoot this stuff and we had like crowds around us, or if it started to feel like we had all eyes on us when we were doing our stuff. Generally people just will be in the middle of Lonsdale Key or Granville Island or wherever, and people just walk around us and shop and pick up their stuff, and they don't even care that we're sitting there talking about video games for television.
I like to rubberneck a tad, but I know you're busy, so I just like look for as long as I can without looking too awkward.
Well, I mean, it's really rewarding, man. It's like we're in a bubble, right? Like we work hard here, so we are just focused on what we do, and we have a lot of content to make, and we have a lot of stuff to watch and play and sort of know about before we get out in front of the camera. So we're kind of in our bubbles a lot, you know, and we don't even realize that this stuff gets seen and that it connects with people and that they like it. So conventions like this allow us that time to connect with viewers, you know, and get feedback and get thanked for the work. And it's really fantastic. And I'm so psyched that we're finally getting a convention in Vancouver. I can't believe that it's taken this long, you know. And we're helping them. We're obviously having the Canadian Video Game Awards there, but I'm also reaching out to friends that I have within the creative community to be there. And so we're going to have a booth presence. We're going to have an EP/Canadian Video Game Awards presence on the show floor, and we're going to have some guests there that are going to be pretty cool. David Hayter is going to be one of them, and I'm signing up some other people, you know, as we speak, from the game side and some other actors. And I'm really psyched that this is happening, because I travel to these things all the time. I go to, you know, I've gone to stuff in Chicago and New York and Los Angeles and San Diego, Seattle. And we send our crews to Germany. You know, we go to this stuff all the time. And so much of that stuff is made in Canada, and tons of it is made right here in Vancouver, you know. And all the time, we go to, like, the Comic-Con's a great example, and which is Mecca, man. Like, everybody that likes this stuff should make it to Comic-Con in San Diego. It's incredible. But we always run into the actors, the cast of Fringe, and the people making SSX on the plane, you know, from San Diego. Like, and we end up all talking, or the people working on Sanctuary or whatever, you know. And it's really illuminating that we're all leaving here, this really creative hub, you know. And we all know, like, Superman shot here, and Fringe is shot here, and Supernatural is shot here, and Smallville. Like, all of these big, cool, geeky genre-type programs are made here, and they're celebrated in San Diego, like, or other conventions or whatever. We've never done this. So now there exists this opportunity with both Fan Expo and the Canadian Video Game Awards to kind of rally the local troops, you know, all these people, all these actors and game makers and comic people and animators, and get them all into one room together and have a little bit of a celebration, and then invite all of the fans of this stuff. And there are millions of them in our province, you know, or just down across the border into Seattle, that are going to have a blast coming to this thing.
I know I'm excited. Is there anyone you're particularly excited to see coming up?
I mean, I'm super excited that David accepted the opportunity to host. I think he's unbelievable talent and just a terrific guy. And he's Canadian, and I think our country is really proud, if Canadians know, that he is A, Canadian, and B, how successful he is. I mean, he's not just the voice of Solid Snake. He's, you know, an established writer, and he's done, you know, film acting. He wrote X2. He wrote Watchmen. The guy is ensconced in this geek culture at every level, and to have played this seminal video game character for as long as he has. I think 1998 was the first year that Metal Gear Solid came out for the PlayStation 1, and he has been phenomenal in that role. He is identified with that role. And we believe in that character so much because of his vocalization of it, you know. And it's such a cool character, a cool persona to bring out to the world. And I know he wants to have fun with that, so I'm excited to have him there. But I'm really excited to blend the worlds, and that's been one of the more rewarding things about working on these shows and watching them kind of grow and spiral outwards, is that we do have a really great cross section of disciplines and creativity sort of represented in Electric Playground and now on the awards and at Fan Expo. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing game makers sitting and talking and being interested with actors and vice versa, and seeing comic people and toy people all kind of integrating and working together. Like, it really hit me when we were touring with EP and shooting in all these studios, that it didn't matter if we were at a film studio or a post-production house or at a toy company or an animation studio, or they all had the same desks. They all had computers and they had action figures, and most of those action figures were kind of similar, and the people making all of this stuff were kind of similar and into the same stuff. And that really kind of resonated that our programming needed to evolve to include all of these different geeks, you know, because mm-hmm. we are all consuming a lot of the same stuff. The same people that go and buy God of War also will check out Wrath of the Titans when it comes out. And it's a great crossover. And they might watch the Clone Wars animated show, you know, and they might be excited that Sam Witwer, who is on Being Human, is Darth Maul, and he was also Starkiller in The Force Unleashed, you know.
And the Emperor.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure.
Cool.
Beyond all pleasures. Thank you so much for chat.
It's my pleasure, man.
I do have one more question, though.
Yeah.
I know you're pretty into music.
Yes.
What kind of bands are you into, and do you have any requests?
I love Bloc Party. Nice. I love that band. They're like one of my favorite bands of all time. I have seen them live, and I just love the energy. I love the sound that they have. It certainly has an 80s kind of vibe, and I've been around long enough that I remember a lot of the music from the 80s. They're one of my favorite bands. I'm also a huge... I love stories in music. So I love Ryan Adams. I love Tom Waits. I love Elvis Costello. John Hyatt's a favorite of mine. Well, not a friend of mine, but a favorite of mine. Chris Isaak, even. I like that kind of stuff. So I like a lot of singer-songwriters. I know he's kind of old and it's not super hip to say, but I'm excited when I hear that Springsteen has got a new album out there, you know. I like that kind of stuff. But I also like Arctic Monkeys and Gotye or whatever that guy's Gotye or whatever. His track was great. I'm always listening for new sounds and new music out there. I'll tell you, one of the best video game soundtracks I've heard recently was Red Dead Redemption's, man. Mm-hmm. That was just kick-ass, infusing all of this old sort of Western sound, not country and Western, but this Western sensibility and this folky, guitar-centric ballads in there. It was killer. You guys should play that. Red Dead Redemption, play something off of that soundtrack.
Forward through the night. felt so happy you could die. Told myself that you were right for me, but felt so lonely in your company. But that was love and to make us still remember.
Among us, taking our women and The alphabet has only 26 letters. With these 26 magic symbols, however, millions of words are written every day.
April and Discorder is here. Daffodils are blooming, cherry blossoms blossoming, and Discorder smells spring fresh off the presses. Check inside for monthly faves, The Overeducated Grumbler, on the topic of Dan Levy, getting textually active with rock stars, and news on the venues you know and love. Read up on the lovelies of Ruffled Feathers, Indigo Kids, and Dirty Spells, and figure out where to pick up hard copies of their stuff at your favorite local record store on Record Store Day. Reviews, calendars, charts, interviews, art projects, photos, write-ups, and teardowns, all that and more in your free April issue of Discorder. Pick up your beautiful and free copy of Discorder at any Friends of CITR business, or if you've gone paperless, don't forget to check out Discorder at discorder.ca. Discorder, that magazine from CITR, supporting local music for over 25 years.
UBC's Museum of Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of Indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
I can feel it all the way down to my plums, getting all swollen, with a light blue hue to them, fresh and juicy, ready for the picking. I want to bite into that plum and let the juice spill down my chin. You know what I mean?
CITR Campus Radio. Can you feel it?
I can feel it down in my plums. They're getting a nice bluish hue. Getting ready to take them to the farmer's market. A special two plums for one.
Thank you.
Devastator on Shameless 119 FM CITR. No Constructicons involved, though they're a Vancouver-based band playing next Saturday, the 14th, at the Iron Road Studios over on Raymer and Cordova downtown, with other hometown bands Slow Learners and Indian Wars. The track was The Newman Generator. I'm assuming it's a device that generates obese mailmen who come to your apartment and harass you. Earlier in the set of music, we had some choice tracks of Victor Lucas's. I assume this is the kind of music he rocks out to on his way to work. We had Block Party with Hunting for Witches. Before that was Gautier, hailing from Belgium. He'll be at the Vogue Theater this Sunday. Off his record, Making Mirrors, the track was Someone I Used to Know. Next up, one of my favorite bands from around town, Love Cuts. They are playing the Astoria this Friday with Random Cuts, Watermelon, and a new band to the Vancouver scene, Slim Feathers. It is a fundraiser for the Music Waste Festival that's coming up this year. It's that week of the year where any venue worth its weight in caribou beers is wall-to-wall indie. So now for your listening pleasure, here is Love Cuts and the track, one of my faves they've got, Lone Wolf on Shameless 119 FM CITR. You're listening to Shameless on 101.9 FM CITR here in Vancouver. In that last set of music, we had tracks from School of Seven Bells, The Night from their latest record, Ghost Story. They are playing The Electric Owl on Tuesday, the 24th of February. And we just had music from Grimes with Genesis from their latest record, Visions. And Grimes getting a lot of play here on CITR as they are number one on the CITR charts. Everyone loves to talk about the number one band in the CITR charts, but whoever thinks about good old number 30, the backbone of any good charts, that spot belongs to our lovely Mac Lou from here in Vancouver off their record Pooja. This track number one, Trouble Thing. Our chat with Sean Hatton coming up right after this.
spice of DNA to make a mutant blob like the ones that came from space. When I got to work today, the blob was gone and broke loose and wrecked this place. Tell the television I'm just in time to see the blob devour the newsman's face. Mutant blobs attack. All the wrong time of science hack. Mutant blobs attack. I should have just perfected my jetpack. Yesterday everything was fine. Now today we're in this fight with an enemy no one understands, one that eats everything in sight. It's all the fault of a science hat. Mutant blobs attack. My best intentions were out of whack. Mutant blobs attack. They'll eat you whole just for a snack. Mutant blobs attack. You can't escape in your suit of hatchback.
Just when you thought it was safe to make pets with gelatinous blobs, the mutant blobs have attacked again. It is a new video game on a new system, the PlayStation Vita, a slick device if I've ever seen one. And now, Tales from Space Mutant Blobs Attack was produced by Toronto developer Drinkbox Studios, and the song for your game that you just heard was crafted by Mr. Sean Hatton. Sean Hatton is a great musician and also a video game aficionado, appearing daily on the Electric Playground and Reviews in the Run on City TV and the G4 Network. He'll also be in attendance at Fan Expo, the greatest convention Vancouver's ever seen, on the 21st and 22nd of April. It's always a pleasure to chat with him. We'll be chatting about all the things I've just mentioned, and of course, much, much more, because he is on the line right now.
Hello, Sean. How are you doing?
Pretty good, how are you?
I'm doing well.
When we last spoke, it's clear that music and video games is a passion for you, and now you've created the music for the game Tales from Space, Mutant Blobs Attack. What was making the music for that game like?
Well, to be clear, my friend Peter actually made most of the music on Mutant Blobs Attack. He also did the music in Tales from Space About a Blob, which is the precursor. And the dudes at Drinkbox Studios, I know quite a lot of them, and they're pretty awesome guys, and I posted this goofy album where it was just me and some synthesizers, and I was just singing these stupid songs really about little life annoyances that I have, like being stuck in traffic or telemarketers calling me. And the guys at Drinkbox, when I posted this, they were listening to it and they were loving these songs, like they thought it was hilarious. And I guess some people in the office were just huge fans of it, so they asked me if I wanted to do a song for the game, which would be like the end credit song. I said, yeah, sure. So the whole process was pretty easy, actually. And it was a lot of fun because I got to talk to them before anyone else, really, to learn what the story of the game was and to know what was going on, because I wanted to have lyrics that kind of reflected what was going on in the game. And so we had, I guess, maybe it was just one phone meeting and then just a bunch of emails back and forth on lyrics and style and tone and that kind of thing. And it was really easy to do because basically I made a version of the song. This was after I had written lyrics, and they listened to it and they were like, okay, this is great, it's just a little too long. And they told me how long they needed the song, so I just cut it back, and that was about it.
Huh. Is it different than making music for yourself, like otherwise, as Mega Sean?
Yeah, I didn't swear, which, I mean, usually I don't in music that I make, but that was something that I had to keep in mind, like, don't swear at all. Another thing that was different was that I actually used Cubase for the first time from start to finish for the entire song, and usually I jump around from different programs and try a bunch of different things, but I had just been given a trial Cubase activation code from the guys at Steinberg Canada because they wanted me to just check it out because they knew that I like making music and stuff like that. And so I had free rein at this program, and I was kind of learning things as I was going along. And it was neat because I was able to, like, usually I use an instrument and use the audio out and input that into the computer and just record it as a wave. And so this time I was using MIDI for the first time, which you can change instruments on the fly, like, after you've already recorded certain keystrokes. So it was neat going through and tabbing through different styles of synthesizers once I've already arranged the notes. And it was cool to be involved in producing a song on that end of things, which I guess is, you know, a lot of people do that, but it was a first for me, so it was kind of interesting.
Who do you suppose has the best video game music in history? Like, what's your
in
favorite
history?
Video game music? Yeah.
I think Koji Kondo does, definitely. He's done a lot of Nintendo stuff, and two of my favorite musical scores from games were done by him. That was Super Mario 2 and Star Fox, and he's done so many. So I would say he is the number one guy as far as game music is concerned for me.
What do you suppose is your biggest disappointment in video game soundtracks?
I think the direction that a lot of new games are going with orchestral scores, they're mostly forgettable to me. And I understand why they do it, because, like, as games evolve and they become more cinematic, I think developers just want more epic or grandiose arrangements, and they seem kind of like ho-hum, like it could be any piece of music in there, really. And that, to me, is the biggest disappointment. It seems like as graphics are getting better and better, the music is just becoming more, I don't want to use the word mainstream, but it's sounding more and more the same, and there's less unique sounds between different AAA games.
You know, it's not forgettable. It's Green Jelly on Maximum Carnage. Cannot forget that.
Wow, I forgot that they were in that soundtrack. That was almost the first CD I bought, was their one with the Three Little Pigs song, and I actually never bought it.
Game Players actually got me into Green Jelly because they were like, this is the best band ever, Maximum Carnage. He's like, okay, I'll take you guys.
I remember that profile because it was like, it was weird to have a band profile, first of all, in a game magazine. And then they were saying how Green Jelly's motto was, we suck. And I think in retrospect, they did kind of suck. But it was, they were very of the time, I think.
So if I could change gears, perhaps drastically.
Sure.
I know you cover a lot of iOS games on Reviews on the Run and EP Daily. And with the rising popularity in DLC and downloadable games themselves, do you think this could ever surpass physical copies and physical consoles themselves?
I think it definitely has the potential to surpass in terms of game sales, physical copies, but I think physical copies will always be there because there are a lot of people who just don't have access to super high-speed internet, and a lot of the service providers here in Canada, at least, are kind of grumpy when it comes to giving people a lot of bandwidth. So we've got things that are really stupid, like bandwidth caps, that really work against that happening. I download a lot of the iOS games, obviously, because that's the only way to get them. And I'm even finding that on my computer, like, I only have, like, so much space on there, and every now and then I have to go, and I find that, oh, my C drive has, like, less than a gig left on here. What's on here? And it's all this iOS stuff that I've been reviewing, so I have to go through and really pick and choose and clear stuff out on perhaps a monthly basis. And so I think things like that work against digital downloads taking over as the main medium, so to speak. That said, I have a Vita, and I do prefer the digital downloads over the cards, because it's kind of a pain to swap these cards out. They of course have not made it terribly easy, because you have to open a flap and then eject the card and then, you know, put the new card in, close the flap and wait for it to load up and all that kind of stuff. But I think we will eventually get to a point where we'll have a console that doesn't have physical media. We've certainly seen it happen with PCs, where you don't really have too many reasons to go to a game store and pick up a PC game on DVD or CD anymore, because you have things like Steam, which are fantastic. But as far as consoles go, I think, you know, consoles are more kid-friendly as well. And I think for kids, at least for me when I was a kid, I loved getting physical things for presents. So, like, getting a game as a present would be a big thing. And I don't really see it being as enjoyable to get a download card for a present and say, okay, go download the latest Super Mario or whatever. So I think we may see a point where just downloads take over, but it'll definitely be a while.
Do you see any negative elements to DLC, like paying for extra content to download that's already on the disc?
Yeah, I think that's a load of crap. Like, if something is on a disc, it should be available right away from the get-go. Unless it's a case of you have to play through the game and then you unlock a costume, which was the case in a lot of earlier Resident Evil games. I'm not sure if you're a fan of that series or not, but you would play through a Resident Evil game, put in your hours, like 10, 20 hours, however long it took, and then you could start up the game again, but there would be another room where it would be like the costume room or the wardrobe room, and you can go in there and you have a new key and it opens a new door and there's like different costumes in there. And that was kind of a cool bonus and a neat way to show your friends like, hey, I already beat the game. And sometimes you would be able to get more costumes in different games the more you played. And I think that kind of thing going away in favor of paid DLC is pretty crappy. And in the end, it really comes down to the individual. Like, if you want to pay four real dollars for a costume, then by all means, go ahead. But I just think that's stupid.
It seems more and more common now that in lieu of getting XP, your XP is now your own dollars that you spend into getting to upping your ammo or guns or games.
Yeah, it's pretty lame. I don't think that's going to go away. And I think that publishers are always going to attempt to find new ways of making more money, and that's definitely one way that has been working for them is charging more for things like costumes. And when it comes to things that actually affect the gameplay, then it makes a little more sense. Like if it's a game like Gears of War 3 and it's a year old and now more maps are being available as DLC and you pay an extra 15 or 20 bucks. If someone is a huge fan of Gears of War, that's the only way they're going to get some new content. And that, in turn, supports the developer, so I am for that. But if it's something stupid like, now you can have a pink chainsaw and it's $5 and it's already on the disc, that's just people gouging their customers.
I was always curious, how did you come to realize that you could write on video games on such a professional level beyond just being a hobby?
Well, I don't know if it's, I would call my writing about video games necessarily professional, but thank you for that. And I think I just realized that several years ago when I was doing music writing, and I wrote for a magazine called Chart Magazine, which is sadly not around in physical form anymore. Now it's on the internet, but under new management. But they had started doing video game coverage, and that's when I got into writing about video games. Because before, I would always play them with my friends and talk about them with my friends, and it wasn't something that I thought one could necessarily make any sort of money on. Not that I made much money on game reviews back then. But I really realized that people could do this for a living back when game magazines were popular, like Game Pro and Game Players and EGM, I guess in the mid-90s. But when I realized that I could do it, I guess was when Vic called me and asked me to audition for him. And that was really the turning point for me, because up until then it was just something that I did for fun. And now, of course, it's something that I do for fun, but then it's also how I make my money. So I've just been really fortunate, I guess.
You also interview a lot of celebrities, like Liam Neeson. Do you ever get maybe intimidated a little bit by how much you could respect someone when you're in their physical presence, a mere few feet away?
It definitely is surreal. I'm not sure if intimidation would be the right word to use, but there are instances where I've been interviewing someone and then I've thought in the back of my head, like, oh my god, I'm interviewing like Stan Lee, and he's talking to me. What the hell? What, how did this even happen? But you got to hold it together when you're talking to someone of note like that, because usually you only have very few minutes to get your questions and get the answers, and then you have to get out of there because someone else is scheduled for another interview. And for things like movies, it's totally like that. So with Liam Neeson, I was talking to him for 4 minutes, so I had to really compose myself. There were so many things that as a fan you want to say and mention and say, you know, I really appreciate your work on this series, or I thought you were fantastic in this movie. But you really have to be focused and keep it to the task at hand, because it could very easily get sidetracked. And actually during that interview, because it was Sam Worthington and Liam Neeson, because they were both in Wrath of the Titans, there were some instances where they were just joking and bantering between each other, which I thought was kind of cool. But then I was also concerned, like, okay, I have more stuff to ask you guys. So I had to play like this kind of balancing act where I didn't want to necessarily be rude and interrupt them, because they might end up saying something super awesome. But then at the same time, I want to make sure that I got all the questions that I needed to get in there, so that I can get the answers and they and my editors can cut these pieces.
Well, it's cool they can enjoy themselves in that environment. I always assume that actors are just bored out of their minds. The turnstile of interviewers coming through.
I would assume that too, but some of them are really good sports about it.
Stepping softly in a danger zone. No weapon in. This brain designed by man has got me in trouble again, trouble again. I live my life in jeopardy, in the service of my friends. I wouldn't care, but it's a dangerous affair.
Personally, I'm a big fan of your cover of Stuart Copeland's Trouble Again, the theme to the Droids cartoon.
Oh, thank you.
How do you, like a lot of people when they choose to cover a song, have very specific reasons for doing so. What was your reasoning for covering Trouble Again?
Well, I play that song with my band Cobra live every so often. And I think we decided to cover it as a band just because it's kind of an obscure reference, and it's a very cool song. And for anyone who's listening right now who hasn't heard the song, I urge you go to YouTube and search for the Droids theme song, and it's super cool. And I didn't even realize that it was a Stuart Copeland written song until I looked it up, and sure enough, it's on Wikipedia saying that he's written it, but it totally sounds like a lost Police song. And there's just something so rocking about it, and so cool and upbeat, and yet at the same time it's from the perspective of what I assume is C-3PO, and he's really lamenting his life and how he has no control over it, and he does all this stuff for his friends, and he's always getting in trouble, and it's fun, and it's also touching at the same time, and it's just a really fun song to play on drums, and I wanted to have a recording of it as well, and when I'm playing that song with my band, it's me singing, and our bass player, Edie, she sings the backup vocals, and she harmonizes and does all that, and I just wanted to have a nice recording where I played everything and sung everything, and I'm pretty happy with the way it turned out. I'm glad that you like it as well.
You know what's shameful?
What's that?
Is that Droids came out on DVD a few years ago.
I know.
That song never made
it. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah,
it's not on the DVD.
I know. Well, Zach, I guess it's a DVD of a VHS from even further back, but man.
Yeah.
They got to put that show on DVD proper.
I know. I'd love to see the entire run. I don't think it lasted too long, but I got the DVD, and I was really surprised at how good the quality of the show was. You know, it's a cartoon, obviously, so there's those goofy cartoon 80s moments, but there's some really cool things going on in the show, and I'm surprised at how mature it really was. And of course, when it was on, I was way too young to get it, and I thought it was boring, but, you know, now I can appreciate that it was actually pretty cool.
And of course, you're also going to be at Fan Expo. How would you grade that, your excitement on Fan Expo Vancouver, if it were a game and you were reviewing it?
I would grade it right now at a 9 out of 10. The only reason that it's not a 10 is because I have a lot of stuff that I have to go to and cover for the show beforehand, and usually I can't afford to think too far in advance. And right now it feels like Fan Expo Vancouver is still far in the future, even though it's just towards the end of the month. But before that, I'm going to PAX in Boston.
Nice.
And then I'm going to DC immediately after that for Mission Impossible Junket, where I'm going to interview Brad Bird. So I'm really excited about that. But in terms of the actual coolest thing that I get to do all year, it usually is Fan Expo. So I'm very excited about Fan Expo Vancouver, because I want to see how the vibe is different in a different city. And I've been to the Vancouver Convention Center before, just walking through, and I just love the look of it. I love that it's on the water, and it's so beautiful around there, like that part of town. So I'm really looking forward to, like, when it's in Toronto, it's at the same place, and I know Toronto so well. I've been going to Fan Expo for like 15 years, even before being on EP. Like, I would just go there as a fan all the time. So I feel like I really know the area well, whereas Vancouver, it'll feel like, ooh, I'm in an exotic city, and I don't know what's going on around here. And plus, I'll get to see people that I never get to see, which is amazing. That, by that, of course, I'm talking about, like, Vancouver convention goers. So, like, when you go to a lot of conventions in Toronto, you tend to see the same people over and over again, and they're all awesome, but I really love meeting new people, so that's what I'm most excited about.
And what do you think people can expect from, because you've been to a lot of Fan Expos in Toronto, what is the Fan Expo experience like?
Wow, that's a great question. It's just, I guess at first it's a feeling of being overwhelmed with all the cool stuff that's around, and just looking around, hunting for deals on collectibles from the different vendors that are there. One of my favorite things about any convention is the Artist Alley, where you have the independent artists or the people who actually draw and write big comics just hanging out in this really tiny area. Well, it's not really too tiny, but it just feels like it's a really intimate area because the tables are close together, and you could see, like, people who write Batman and people who draw The Flash just hanging out talking to fans, and you can get sketches from them, you could just talk to them, you could see other projects that they're working on. Getting to buy comics and other cool things directly from the people who make them is probably the best part of any convention, and I definitely spend a lot of time in Artist Alley at whatever convention I'm at. So that, to me, is the place to be. Like, when you go in, you're going to be distracted by all the big booths that are there, and they'll probably have tons of cool things that you can get that they're just giving away. But, like, the real heart of the convention is Artist Alley. Like, these are the guys who work their butts off every day making cool comics and doing cool things, and just getting to discover all these independent books that you would probably never even hear of had it not been for just walking by them and talking to these guys. That is like the real gem of any convention, so hit up Artist Alley for sure.
Who do you suppose you're most excited to see out of the people, Artist Alley or otherwise?
Oh, like celebrities? I'm just excited to see people who come up to chat with me. That's always a lot of fun. Like, I was just at a convention in Toronto where I wasn't a guest. I just went because I wanted to go look at things and buy comics. And it was cool just having people come up and say, hey, you're on Electric Playground, or hey, I like that review you did, or can you recommend me cool apps and stuff like that. So just getting to chat with people is a ton of fun, and that's what I'm pretty excited about. That's who I'm excited about meeting, just people who I don't even know yet.
Oh, that is the
and
best
I'm excited
answer.
About meeting you as
oh,
well.
That's even a better answer. Oh, shucks. All a blush. Well, Sean Hatton, this has been an excellent interview. An excellent time.
Oh, well, thanks, Jonathan.
It's always a pleasure.
I agree.
One last thing, though.
Okay.
Do you have any requests of the show?
I would like to hear Karate Man by the Super Friends, if you can make that happen.
A cigarette. Well, I don't think smoking is grown up at all. Because it's very dangerous. Smoking does dreadful things to your lungs and is very bad for your heart. Well, I know I don't have one, but humans do, and I think we should set a good example. Well done, R2. Oh, hello. You know smoking is bad for your health, and it isn't grown up at all. So please, don't smoke. R2, do you really think I don't have a heart?
And so concludes another Shameless on 101.9 FM CITR. Huge thanks to Sean Hatton and Victor Lucas for chatting tonight. You can meet them and other EP Daily and Reviews on the Run crew at Fan Expo Vancouver at the Vancouver Convention Center this April 21st and 22nd. That's a Saturday and a Sunday, as well as a whole slew of other cool people. Burt Ward, Adam West, Michael Dorn from Star Trek The Next Generation, Worf will be there, David Hayter, Solid Snake. Oh, it's going to be a great, great time. However, this show is done, but the party is going to keep going here on 101.9 FM CITR because it is now time for Folk Oasis, this time starring not Val, but me. She's got Val's off in New Zealand. She's left the show in, well, my capable hands. I do believe you and I are going to have a lot of fun for the next 2 hours here on CITR. There is just one more track that I felt I had to play. This off one of my favorite video game soundtracks, perhaps a cop-out, but still a video game soundtrack nonetheless that I quite enjoy. It is to the video game FIFA 12, and it is The Strokes with Machu Picchu. Enjoy, in good health. I'll be back in a mere few minutes.